That's not how teenagers talk.
What's the deal with my brain? Why am I so obviously insane in a perfect situation?
Hello. Rish Outfield here. Rish Outcast in progress.
All I have to do is swing and I'm a hero.
I was updating my calendar of, I don't know if it's calendar, my schedule of episodes today. And I was really surprised how many I had done and lined up. And if I spaced them out only a week apart, you know, I would have 2 months worth of episodes all ready to go. And I just basically have to upload them and post them. On Patreon, I can just post them directly there. It's kind of amazing how easy that is. But there was a bit of a learning curve when it came to figuring out how to upload my own episodes of this show. When Big Anklevich had always handled that with the Dune Steve. It's just he knew how to do it, and I left it to him. And I shouldn't have. From the very beginning, I should have said, hey, let me know how to do this. And it didn't occur to me that that could be problematic later. But when it came time for my own show, Big set it up for me, and he uploaded the first, I think, 2 or 3 episodes. And I discovered later that he has administrator privilege over those episodes, so I can't edit them, I can't change them. I wanted to put, like, better episode art, and I couldn't. Still can't. But Marshall Latham and I started doing the Delusions of Grandeur podcast, and I asked him to help me figure out exactly how, step by step, to upload an episode. So he sent me this, and part of the problem, the reason I never could get it, was because when I first started my own show, I would put up an episode every 4 months, every 5 months. So, you know, maybe I'd work extra hard and I'd get one in after 2 months. But that's not enough practice to figure these things out. Basically, you start from scratch every time when you let that much time go in between episodes. And so once I started doing this show all the time, I no longer needed to use Marshall's notes. I uploaded the show the exact same way each time, and I just know how to do it now. Although, I don't know how to do anything else. There have been a couple of times when I've needed to make a change, upload a newer version, and I don't know how to do. And I didn't really know how to swap out an episode. All I knew how to do was upload a new one. Guys, I'm not very technical minded. I'm not good with numbers. I'm not good with math or programming. I'm so much better with words and ideas. Like, I am excellent at proofreading and catching misspellings and catching Y-O-U-R instead of Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, you know, that sort of thing. But I'm just not good with the other side to commerce or podcasting. I feel like I lost track of what I was talking about. Let's go back. Here I am in the car. I've got about an hour's drive ahead of me. And I thought, well, do I listen to audiobooks or do I listen to the radio or do I podcast? And I started listening to an audiobook. And I don't know why I do this to myself. It's another YA book, and those tend to frustrate me because the characters, well, okay, the one that I'm listening to right now, the characters all speak so eloquently. They're all so clever and sharp and quick-witted, and finally I just had to stop it because it was just too much. Too much banter, too quickly. And so I turned on the radio, and it was Obsession by Anna Motion. And I got about 30 seconds into that. And then I was like, no, I'm going to podcast. So here I'm podcasting. Recently, I listened to an audiobook by an older writer. When I say older, I guess I mean he's been around for as long as I've been reading. And I guess he's an old man now, since I'm getting there. And it was really well written. A lot of world building. A lot of, what do they call it? Where they establish the rules of magic in this fantasy. And yeah, part of it took place in a magical world. And then the rest took place in a typical American high school. And I gotta admit that every time it came back to the high school, it was like the emergency brake had been pulled. And the momentum of the story just stopped. And my, I guess, suspension of disbelief. What do you call it when you start to be carried along by the narrative? You start to be involved emotionally. But that would just stop whenever it came time for the teenagers to interact and behave. A, I didn't like any of them. It just, it was grating. But more importantly, they didn't feel like real teenagers at all. It felt like somebody in their late 60s remembering what it was like to be a teenager. Maybe not even that. Maybe it felt like somebody in their mid-60s imagining what teenagers today would sound like. And I have to admit that it really hindered my enjoyment of the book. It didn't feel genuine. And I remember when I first moved to Los Angeles, I didn't have cable. I didn't have any money. I didn't have money for books even. So basically I listened to the radio, which was free. And I watched regular over-the-air television, which was also free. And I would give all these shows a chance that were on because why not? And I discovered that there were a couple of shows. I mean, Dawson's Creek is probably the best example. Dawson's Creek and its ilk, where I would watch it and I would become really frustrated with the writing because I didn't watch soap operas growing up, but whenever I see a parody of a soap opera, there's a sort of heightened melodrama that exists there. And that's what I felt watching Dawson's Creek and watching these other shows that were like Dawson's Creek. And it made me feel like I was too old to be watching it. Like maybe I was doing a bad thing. Like at any moment, mom or dad would walk in the room and it'd be like, just a minute. That kind of thing. And I was torn because I felt like Dawson's Creek was a well-made show and it had like the prettiest girl in the world on it. So I kept wanting to watch it, but it kept losing me. It didn't feel right. And I read an interview with Kevin Williamson, who was the creator of the show. And he said, you know how when you have an argument with somebody and the argument is over, you replay it in your head over and over again, saying, I should have said this. And, oh, this would have been the best thing when she said that. Well, the characters on Dawson's Creek always say those things that you would have said if you could have gone back and done it again. And now I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty dang close to what Williamson said. And I remember thinking, oh, what a neat comparison. What a neat analogy. I really, really like that. And I think after that, I watched it with a little bit more, with a grain of salt, maybe, where I had that in the back of my mind, where it's like, okay, this isn't supposed to be reality. This is supposed to be heightened reality. This is supposed to be teenagehood the way that you wish that it had been. And not long after that, I got some roommates, because it was just too hard to make rent by myself. And once I had roommates, Dawson's Creek went out the window. The television became sort of a communal television. What everybody wanted to watch is what we would watch. But anyhow, the majority of my stories that I write tend to either be about teenagers or they tend to be about old people. And I have to admit that I struggle sometimes when it comes time to just come up with a bunch of teenagers shooting the breeze, because I haven't been one of those in a long, long time. And sometimes I am tempted to make characters more clever or more educated sounding or more funny than real teenagers are. And I guess when I say real teenagers, I'm saying than I was when I was a teenager. Because, you know, I'm not the smartest kid in my class or in my row or at my locker. And I tried to be clever, but it didn't always work. But there has to be a middle ground between writing pubescent 60-year-olds and writing teenagers the way that they actually are. Sometimes I'll hear my brother-in-law's kid on the phone with his girlfriend, and it's just, I got to come up with a softer word than nauseating. We've all been there where you're talking to somebody and you play the idiot, no, you hang up, or you say it first, you say it game. And when you're a kid or when you're a teenager, it's this new experience and it's rad. But hearing it as a middle-aged guy, I'm a grown-ass man. It's just too saccharine sweet. Just, it's not cool. And I guess that's part of what I have to keep in mind when I'm writing these young characters, that this is the first time he's had a girlfriend, or he's talked to a girl on the phone, or he's asked a girl on a date, or he's practiced flirting, or he senses that maybe the girl is interested in him, or, you know, he's just going to go hang out with the guys after the game, that kind of stuff. It's all new. It's all uncharted territory. And uncharted territory is always more exciting and dangerous and thrilling. So that stuff is good to keep in mind. Now, it occurs to me while I'm saying this that why do I write about teenagers rather than adults? We've already talked about, and I don't know if that episode has aired, but I have already talked about why I have this interest or fixation, if you will, on old people. I like to write about old people. But as far as teenagers goes, there's got to be a reason for that, right? Is it that once a character gets a certain age, there's a job that they have to worry about, there's a family they have to worry about, a spouse, about kids, a mortgage, bills, in-laws, you know, all that stuff that mires your narrative in a little bit of logistical quicksand. Dang. I missed my exit. You'd be surprised how many times I'm editing a Rish Outcast and I go, dang, I missed my exit. Maybe you wouldn't. There are trappings, and there's also a different mindset when someone is an adult. Let me say a normal adult, a typical adult with a ring on their finger. But they don't have to have kids. They don't have to be married. I guess I write my share of stories about loser guys with nothing going in their life. Maybe they don't even have a job, sitting on the couch in their underwear scratching themselves. Talked to somebody recently that said, you know, too many people buy into this idea that you have to have a house and a yard and a bunch of kids and all this stuff. Where does it say you have to have all that? That you have to work in a job that you hate? That you have to hope for overtime at this job that you despise just so you can make your mortgage payment? I'm trying to remember who it was that I heard say that. They probably had a bong in their hands. I remember in a previous episode, paraphrasing an interview I read with a local author explaining why he wrote YA books instead of anything else. And I was really dismissive. But I also read an interview with what's his name? John Green? Is that his name? The guy who wrote The Fault in Our Stars, a book called Paper Towns. And in that interview, they asked him, why do you write about teenagers? And his answer I liked a lot more than the one I made fun of. His answer was, I like teenagers. I like the teenage mindset. I enjoy writing about teenagers. And I'm not sure if he said for teenagers, but he just, yeah, that's what he liked. And, you know, I can get behind that. If that's what you like, yeah, all right, go for it. And maybe part of what he likes is that idea of wonder, of doing something for the very first time, of experiencing something new, of looking around and saying, wow, I have no idea what's going to happen next because I've never been in this situation before. I guess I got some of that when I was a teenager. It was in very small doses at the very, very, very end. I'm not going to lay blame on where I was raised or how I was raised or any of that stuff, although that probably contributed. Living out in farmland where you couldn't just go to a mall and hang out and see who you ran into was limiting. But also, I'm introverted, and I'm cowardly, and I'm just not very good, even today, at schmoozing or socializing or going out and saying, hey, how you doing? My name is Rich Outfield, and I have a Parsec Award, you know, that kind of stuff. But one of the things that appeals to me, and maybe it appeals to everyone, I don't know, I'm only me, is going back and doing all that stuff again. Living my youth, knowing what I know now. I mean, everybody, every old person says they wish they could go back knowing then what they know now. And I wonder how differently life would be. Because, yeah, a lot of what they teach you in school is useless. A lot of the way that adults talk to kids is insulting or super condescending. And as an adult, or at least mentally adult, I wouldn't stand for that. I would probably make waves and I would not be liked. A lot of the rules that they establish in school and for young people, curfews and such, are to prevent them from getting into trouble, to, I guess, push them along a certain path, a certain mindset. The town where I went to high school had a curfew, and the town that I lived in didn't, because who cared? We didn't have a police station, let alone anybody to enforce a curfew. And so when my friends would talk about, you know, the police stopped us last night and asked, you know, what we were doing, why we were out after curfew, that was alien to me. In fact, I remember, okay, my friends and I, we got together and hung out after we saw a movie, and we were just hanging out and talking, and wouldn't you know it, a police car came up and parked, cop came out, and he asked what we were doing there. And me being a naive kid, also the fact that we weren't doing anything wrong, I just, you know, held up my soda and said, yeah, we're just having a drink and talking. And the other guys were just like, oh, did you really tell that cop we were having a drink? Yeah, okay. In retrospect, having a drink sounds like we're drinking beer, which is not allowed if you're kids. And I'm curious, if I had another go at it, what I might accomplish, what my attitude might be like, and, you know, what things I could do, what heights I could reach. I was thinking about, I traveled back in time to when I went to LA with no money and no plans, just, I still recall that day I left him at a Greyhound station west of Santa Fe. We was 17, though he was sweet and it was true. Still, I did what I had to do, 'cause I just knew. Took it on that line from La La Land pops into my head again. Without a nickel to my name, hopped a bus,
Here I came.
I may be brave or just insane.
We'll have to see.
I think about that and I think about, well, okay, now I know what it's going to be like and I'm tougher mentally now than I was then. Although, I don't know. That was just weird to be on my own. I lived at home my first year, you know, at community college. And then the rest of college, I lived with roommates. So sharing everything, you know, sharing the bathroom, sharing the sink, sharing the fridge. And then I get to LA and suddenly it's just me. And but I think about that. I think about, you know, okay, what would I invest in knowing, you know, that I could be quite wealthy if I bought stock in, you know, fill in the blank. And then it occurs to me, well, I didn't have any money, remember? I left without a nickel to my name. And so I'd still have to get some kind of job. And what kind of job would I be qualified for? So that would be rough. Knowing that I could buy stock in Google or whatever it is, but I don't have money to buy stock in Google. I don't know, I think about the going back and redoing your youth. I think about that idea all the time. As it gets more and more distant, I guess it becomes more and more attractive to try that. It becomes more and more attractive to go back and do it again, this time zig. And I wonder, you know, if I went back in time and my priority was obtain wealth. Well, that's not the most noble use of time travel, is it? I don't know. Let's see. The whole point of this episode was the teenager thing. Ain't no cure for the sun. No. Why must I be a teenager in love? What is... Okay. Working on night moves. Trying to shake those awkward teenage blues. Okay, so I guess this episode is awkward teenage blues. Right now I'm working on a story called Balms and Sears, and it was meant to be a short story, and it's just gotten really, really thick. And I felt like, well, I'm going to need to develop the relationship between the main character and his friends, his new friends that he makes, and I don't know how to do that. I don't know how people make friends. And so I've been writing a lot of scenes where teenagers just talk to each other. And maybe that's fine. Maybe that's what John Green would say is his favorite thing to do. But the story wasn't supposed to be about that. The story was supposed to be about a young teenager struggling with his nature and with a special ability that he has that makes life difficult. And I sort of feel like I had a short story and I'm trying to expand that short story into a novel. And so I'm throwing characters at it without really knowing where it's going. And that's scary. I don't know. I got a couple of friends who are writers and talking to them about their process and where the, not inspiration, but where the motivation comes from to continue the work. And one of the things that I've heard people say is, well, you know, I end up falling in love with my characters and I want to spend time with them. I want to catch up with them, find out where they're going next and just be in the same room with them. And I like that. That sounds logical. That sounds doable. I mean, I tend not to write series except for the Ben Parks thing, which I am trying to write one of every other year. Most of the stuff I write is just one and done. And because a lot of it is horror, yeah, it just doesn't lend itself to write another one of these. But I was talking about that book, the fantasy book that has scenes in modern day high school, and just how that rang false. It just didn't work, that high school stuff. That's right, that was the other place I was gonna go. Whoops. And I'm not terrified of that. I have been told before that I write teenagers well, and I've also been told that I don't write teenagers well. So, not sure how useful those two statements are. I guess the the trick is to remember back to how something felt. Now, the jargon that a teenager uses in 2018 is not the jargon that I used as a teenager in 1988. But I'm sure what a teenager feels is the same. And I've got a teenage niece and I've got a teenage kid of my brother-in-law that I see all the time. And there are negative traits that teenagers have. There tends to be a forgetfulness and a focus on themselves and on what they want to do. They hear what they want to hear, that kind of stuff. That, I don't know, maybe that still exists in me as an old man, but I think that's something to remember from being a teenager, that you are very self-centered. What do you call it when you believe that the world revolves around you? Is it solipsistic? And yet that's not considered a positive trait. It's certainly not considered an attractive trait. And so I guess writing a teenager, you'd have to have him struggle with the temptation to only look out for himself. He struggles not to think that the world revolves around him. I don't know, I'm probably not the best person to be looking at it from a point of maturity, because, you know, in many ways, I'm just, you know, a rapidly graying boy. Huh. Well, I'm not sure that this has been a good episode at all. It's mostly been me thinking, contemplating, reflecting, and going, huh. And I hardly would call that entertainment. Next week, we'll discuss free will versus determinism on the Rish Outcast. No, sorry. The best I can do is just do the best that I can do. And, you know, just keep working. If I struggle with writing realistic dialogue for teenagers in this piece that I wrote, then I need to focus on that in the future one. But I gotta just keep going forward. Keep creating new stuff. That's what I plan to do anyway. So, here's to you and those awkward teenage blues. Good night.
Like it or not, the Rish Outcast is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means you can't alter, sell, or claim ownership of the file. But you can download it, share it, and grind it to bits under your heavy boots free of charge. There's also a Patreon fund attached to it if you've lost hold of your senses and want to encourage more of the show. You can donate $1 an episode and up, or just contribute monthly to Outfield's daft schemes. In return, he presents exclusive content as well as early access to the episodes. Thus endeth the wish. You still here? Well, get out there and get on with your day.
No more Mr. My Guy.
We interrupt this program for a message from the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, in the 1960s and 70s, Motown Records produced uncountable hits, defining the very sound of popular music in the era. Sadly, in the late 20-teens, one particular Motown hit has come to be known by the terror and bloodshed it has, by no fault of its own, unleashed on an unsuspecting populace. As you know, due to the craftiness of the most nefarious hypnotists and cyber terrorists, and a little bad luck, the Mary Wells song, My Guy, has been forever tainted. Once a harmless, charmingly insipid oldies station standard,
Today, anyone who hears the song will violently kill and or mutilate the human being they love the most. Cruel and unfortunate.
The reports have flooded in from Hoboken to Kansas City. People assaulting, battering, and mutilating their loved ones after hearing the song. Why, just this week, my brother-in-law beheaded his firstborn. Two of my former college roommates murdered each other in a bathhouse, and my tax accountant was caught trying to chainsaw a 13-year-old neighbor girl, which was quite embarrassing to everyone involved.
So, it is my sad duty to announce a ban on the 1964 Motown hit, a blacklist on any playing, selling, singing, sharing, or humming of the tune. A crack team of internet programmers and computer nerds have been working round the clock to remove all trace of the song from websites, iTunes, Amazon, radio stations, and social media. If you have the song at home, on CD, one of your grandparents' old records, or a kitschy mixtape, please, do not listen to it. I'm not asking you to destroy it, but your loved ones are at stake here.
The song is trite and completely unnecessary. Why not listen to "He's So Fine, Dulang, Dulang, Dulang," or "Leader of the Pack," or "Doo-Wah-Diddy," or even that irritating "Tears of a Clown" track? My advisors tell me that "Going to the Chapel of Love" by the Dixie Cups is another song released that same year that, in its favor, does not cause people to eat newborns. If it absolutely has to be a Mary Wells song you listen to, "Two Lovers" is passable, or "Laughing Boy" has a nice piano solo, or you could even listen to "Once Upon a Time" without attempting to skewer your own mother with a fireplace poker immediately afterward.
Anyone caught playing or attempting to disseminate "My Guy" will face 6 months in prison and a $50,000 fine. My fellow Americans, it's not worth the risk. The song was mediocre, grating even, a year ago. But now, it is an insidious tool of bloodshed and evil. I'm sure we as a nation can band together and overcome this dark chapter in America's history, so that when it comes to being happy, we are. Thank you.